If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The T-Biz Podcast delivers T-News that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea is captivating, complex, and more intricate than anyone can fully master. That's why the T-Biz portal brings together 40 voices fluent in 12 languages to share the story of tea. Our strength lies in storytelling by professionals who have grown up in the tea lands and speak their native tongue. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. Tea is tea. India's food safety regulators clarify the Camellia sinensis standard. The tea industry global forecast for 2026 is now live. And Asia Siaka Warehousing is the world's first zero-carbon logistics facility. Plus, tea, wellness, and the power of ritual. Why health isn't the whole story. January is Hot Tea Month, and this year, tens of millions are experiencing influenza or flu-like illness, gravitating towards warm, soothing beverages associated with comfort, hydration, and routine rather than clinical treatment. Post-pandemic research consistently shows that health and wellness motivations increasingly overlap with behavioral benefits, such as stress reduction, relaxation, and daily rituals, rather than with explicit disease prevention claims. Adagio Tea's founder, Michael Kramer, joins us today to explain why tea's greatest benefits lie not in miracle claims, but in habit, ritual, and personalization. More in a minute. But first, this important message.
What happens when businesses along the tea supply chain get together and support women and children in tea communities? The Mother and Child-Friendly Seal for Responsible Business is creating long-term positive impacts, making your cup of Ceylon tea all the sweeter. Learn more at srilanka-motherandchildseal.org.
Tea is tea. India's food regulator, the Food Safety and Standards Authority of India, FSSAI, has issued a clarification reaffirming that products labeled and marketed as tea must be derived exclusively from Camellia sinensis. The clarification aligns India's regulatory framework with the long-standing international definition of tea established under ISO 3720, first adopted in 1977. Under that standard, tea is defined solely as the product obtained from the leaves, buds, and tender stems of Camellia sinensis, processed by accepted methods such as withering, oxidation, heating, and drying. FSSAI's clarification does not prohibit the sale of herbal or botanical beverages. Instead, it clearly distinguishes between tea and non-tea infusions for labeling, marketing, and consumer transparency. So why does all this matter? From a consumer standpoint, the decision resolves long-standing ambiguity in the marketplace where herbal blends, spice infusions, and caffeine-free beverages have often been marketed as tea, despite containing no tea leaves. Regulators say the clarification helps ensure consumers know what they are buying, particularly regarding caffeine content, functional properties, and traditional expectations associated with tea. For the tea industry, especially in India, the response has been broadly positive. Producers and trade bodies view the move as reinforcing the integrity of tea as an agricultural product, protecting the value of origin-based teas, and aligning domestic standards with international trade norms. Some marketers and wellness brands have expressed concern that the clarification may require changes to packaging, product naming, and promotional materials, particularly for products commonly sold as herbal chai or chai-style blends that do not contain tea. Regulators, however, have emphasized that such products remain fully permissible, provided they are accurately described as herbal infusions or botanical beverages rather than tea. EU's tradition is significantly different. In European countries, the word tea is allowed to serve as a consumer shorthand for infused beverages, while relying on ingredient disclosure and claim controls to protect accuracy rather than enforcing a strict boundary on Camellia sinensis. FSSAI prioritizes botanical precision. Both views are agreed on preventing consumer deception. Markets will continue to define meaning, diluting tea's agricultural identity, and may ultimately weaken global standards. India is among the world's largest producers and consumers of tea, with globally recognized categories such as Darjeeling, Assam, and Nilgiri. Industry stakeholders note that clear definitions help preserve category credibility amid growing importance of premiumization, geographical indications, and export competitiveness. By reaffirming an internationally accepted definition rather than introducing a new one, India positions itself firmly with global norms governing the tea trade and labeling. Business Insight. Is tea fundamentally a plant or a practice? FSSI states unequivocally that tea is an agricultural product defined by Camellia sinensis. It is a standards-based view appropriate for regulators. Consumers, however, understand tea is a beverage category defined by how people buy, prepare, and consume it. As tea continues to evolve across wellness, specialty, and lifestyle segments, spin-off as CBD tonics, supplements, and lozenges, this debate is unlikely to disappear and may intensify as regulators, brands, and consumers negotiate where categories' boundaries should sit. TBiz has published the State of the Global Tea Industry 2026 forecast, a multi-part project examining the structural forces now reshaping the global tea economy. This initial release focuses exclusively on the global outlook, setting aside country-level and regional deep dives for later in the year. The project is designed as a working forecast, one that frames what the industry already knows, but often struggles to act on. The forecast opens with an overview and a framing essay that asks a central question: why does the tea industry continue to under-respond to risks that are well-documented, widely discussed, and increasingly structural? From there, the report outlines six core global trends. The first identifies climate volatility as no longer a cyclical disruption, but a permanent operating constraint affecting yields, quality, and costs across origins. The second trend examines how Asia's demand gravity, driven by population growth, income expansion, and domestic consumption, continues to reshape global trade flows and pricing power. The third finds that while the long-discussed global tea surplus is narrowing, misalignment persists between what is produced and what markets increasingly demand. Trend 4 addresses tea pricing, concluding that prices remain structurally stable but undervalued relative to rising production costs and capital needs. The fifth trend highlights labor constraints as a quiet but growing limiter of future supply, particularly in traditional producing regions. And the sixth explores how trade fragmentation and re-export hubs are redefining market access in an era of tariffs, sanctions, and geopolitical risk. Each trend is published as a standalone brief, supported by data, historical context, and open questions rather than fixed conclusions. TBiz will publish the final six global tea trends next week. Business Insight. This forecast is not positioned as a finished report. It's a framework for collaboration on the LinkedIn platform. Tea is too fragmented and conditions are moving too quickly for any single voice to get it right alone. TBiz is inviting producers, traders, policymakers, buyers, and researchers to challenge, refine, and contribute to the forecast as it evolves. The most valuable insights often emerge not from agreement, but from informed dissent. Visit tbiz.com online or the TBiz blog and podcast page on LinkedIn. Asia Siaka Warehousing, Sri Lanka's largest tea auction logistics provider, has achieved a global first for the tea industry, becoming the world's first and only zero-carbon certified company in tea auction logistics. The certification was awarded by the Sustainable Future Group following a full measurement of the company's greenhouse gas emissions, implementation of reduction initiatives, and the offsetting of residual emissions through verified carbon programs. Asia Siaka Warehousing operates a purpose-built warehouse complex of approximately 200,000 square feet with the capacity to store up to 11 million kilograms of tea at any given time. The facility plays a central role in the Colombo tea auction system and handles a significant share of teas moving through Sri Lanka's export pipeline. Importantly, the entire warehouse operation is covered under the zero carbon certification rather than selected zones. The facility already held LEED certification, making Asia Siaka the first tea logistics operation globally to hold both LEED and zero carbon distinctions. It is also certified to ISO 22000, supporting food safety and quality assurance standards. Asia Siaka Warehousing is wholly owned subsidiary of Asia Siaka Commodities, one of Sri Lanka's leading commodity brokerage groups. Managing Director Anil Cook said the certification reflects a commitment to responsible operations across the value chain, noting that Sri Lankan tea is already internally recognized as the world's first ozone-friendly tea. Chief Operating Officer Chamara Disiaka highlighted additional benefits, including energy-efficient storage that preserves tea quality while strengthening appeal in sustainability-focused markets. Cook said, quote, "Running a carbon-neutral warehouse allows the producers and exporters relying on our services to cut part of their supply chain's carbon emissions. It helps them meet international sustainability standards and satisfy environmentally aware buyers. This pioneering achievement gives our clients a distinct competitive advantage," end quote. With this milestone, Sri Lanka becomes the only tea-producing nation able to demonstrate sustainability across plantations, packaging, warehousing, and export logistics. TBiz Insight. When sustainability moves from branding to infrastructure, it stops being a promise and starts becoming a measurable competitive advantage. This week's Tea Price Report is sponsored by the East Africa Tea Trade Association, EATTA, owners of the Mombasa Tea Auction since 1956. Tea markets closed the final days of 2025 on a steady to firm note, with thin holiday volumes masking structurally supportive fundamentals. Across origins, disciplined seller offerings, year-end inventory positioning, and persistently elevated input costs reinforced price floors. Buyers remained selective by grade and origin, but resistance to sharp declines was evident, particularly for cleaner, well-made teas aligned with established blending programs. Colombo closed the year firmly, with limited year-end offerings of bright, high-grown teas continuing to attract interest from Middle Eastern packers covering January shipment requirements. South India CTC markets held steady throughout the year-end period as domestic blenders focused on near-term coverage and deferred discretionary buying until early quarter one. Mombasa remains stable with BP1 and PF grades clearing with narrow bands as reduced catalogs and cautious buyer participation limited volatility. Indonesia traded steadily with export volumes moving via direct sales contracts rather than open auction channels. And now, the outlook. Market tone exits 2025 on a firmer footing than it entered the year. Early quarter one restocking interest is expected to emerge gradually as buyers reassess inventory positions, although sensitivity to price and quality dispersion is likely to remain pronounced. Absent a material demand shock, downside risk appears limited by cost structures and disciplined supply management. That's the T-Biz T-Price Report for week 52, ending December 31st, 2025. For expanded coverage, visit www.tjourney.pub and select T-Biz Price Report. And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hello, I'm Bogdan, a passionate tea drinker and the inventor of the ultimate tea machine, the Brewmaker One. Preparation is key to making fine tea. Sequential steepings deliver the best taste possible and unlock the true value of whole leaf teas and botanicals. Brew automates that process without using any pots or capsules. This simple-to-operate smartphone-controlled device stores steeping profiles to consistently make great tea at the push of a button. Brew also reduces time, waste, and energy. That's because I engineered the brew to remember control settings for temperature, brewing time, and quantity. Using my patented process lets you stack steeps simply and conveniently.
Tea has long been associated with health, calm, and comfort. But how much of that reputation is backed by science and how much by lifestyle? In this spotlight conversation, Michael Kramer explains how consumer perceptions of tea and wellness have evolved since the pandemic, why ritual matters as much as ingredients, and how personalization is shaping the future of tea. From loose leaf adaptations to herbals, mindfulness, and blending, this discussion reframes tea not as a medicine, but as a lifelong companion to healthier living. Michael Kramer is founder and CEO of Adagio Teas, one of the most influential specialty tea retailers in the United States. He launched Adagio in 1999 with the goal of making high-quality loose-leaf tea more accessible while preserving the cultural, sensory, and ritual dimensions of tea drinking. Under his leadership, Adagio pioneered direct-to-consumer sourcing, online education, and consumer-driven tea blending, allowing consumers to create and share their own formulations long before personalization became a retail buzzword. Kramer has been a consistent voice cautioning against overstated health claims, instead positioning tea as a lifestyle practice rooted in pleasure, habit, and social connection. His perspective reflects a deep understanding of consumer behavior, product design, and the long arc of tea culture across markets. Michael holds a bachelor's degree from Rutgers University and an MBA from INSEAD. His analytical background continues to inform Adagio's data-driven and customer-centric approach to tea. The snow's piling up here in Winnipeg, and with daytime highs of negative 20, it never melts. During hot tea month, Michael, I make 32 ounces of hot tea at a time to keep my Yeti thermos filled by my desk. Miami, where you are enjoying a sunny day, sure looks inviting. Have you noticed a shift in consumer motivation around health and wellness since the pandemic, particularly given Adagio's work with functional formulations?
Well, we definitely have a wellness line, just because people were frequently coming with the particular question. You know, my stomach is upset, what tea do you recommend? Or I get frequent headaches, what tea do you recommend? And so we came up with answers, because when we started off, we had like a very generic answer that said a lot of teas are really good for you. Like, find the one that you enjoy and you'll probably drink more of it and therefore get more of the benefit versus treating it as medicine.
Right.
But I think that it was an answer, but it wasn't satisfactory to a lot of people that really are looking for just a singular answer. I have this issue. What do you recommend? And so we did develop a wellness line that has certain ingredients that people were seeking out. And so they, you know, a tea with a particular ingredient that has certain functionality, and that's the one that we kind of promote for that particular ailment. But we're really careful not to make tea seem like medicine.
Yeah, right.
Because I can always get whatever I'm looking for in a pill. So why would I bother putting on a kettle, steeping the leaves, you know, draining, you know, separating the leaves from the water? Like, why would I go through that whole lengthy process if I could just take this little pill, and it does the exact same thing. And so we emphasize the, like, the social aspect, the behavioral aspect of tea. You know, we all spend way too much time sitting down. And so when I need to take a tea break, I get up. Well, that's good for my circulation. I have to go to another room. Well, that's even better. I have to put on a kettle, and the kettle will take only 2 or 3 minutes to, you know, to heat up. Do I go back to my computer, or do I hang out? Because by the time I get back and forth, it's same time, right? So it just forces you to take a break in your day. And while you're standing there waiting for the kettle to heat up, somebody else may walk by. Hey, how's it going? You may strike up a conversation that you otherwise would not have happened. And you learn something, you share something, you find out that there's an event coming up. Like, it just has so many societal benefits that you just can't put in a pill. And so our emphasis to people on tea is, don't treat it as this, like, here's a panacea that's going to solve all my problems.
Right.
Treat it as like a lifestyle. It just sets you up on a healthy lifestyle. And right, it's not going to solve all your problems, but it'll definitely contribute to some of the solutions that you're seeking.
Where do you see the gap between what consumers believe is healthy about tea and what science can actually support?
Well, I think the science is oftentimes done on either in a test tube, not necessarily on people. You literally create a control group. These people do not drink tea. You know, the other group drinks tea, and their behaviors are exactly the same, and tea being the only factor. And so then you can have a scientific study that would conclusively say, yes, tea is, you know, contributing to these things. So we have a sense that tea is promoting health, and we can tell in a test tube that it has a lot of components that are health affirming. We're always careful not to make like very definitive claims. I think people get into trouble when they do that. Like, I know Teavana had a practice of being very explicit about their health claims. They literally would say, this tea will cure head cancer. This tea will cure diabetes. When Starbucks purchased the company and took a look at their sales practices and said, well, you can't say that. Like, we don't have scientific proof of that. And they had to tone it down. And that kind of contributed to the loss of sales, because it's unethical of us to be making claims that we can't back up scientifically. Yeah. And so the way we kind of promote it is, we know tea is healthy for you. Like, it has all the elements that would contribute to your health, and just make it a part of your lifestyle. Don't make it seem like it's the panacea that's going to be like, once I drink this tea, cup of tea, you know, all my ailments are going to go away. We're more focused on the wellness and the lifestyle, as opposed to a particular, you know, here's a study, here's the ailment.
Has the post-COVID period changed how consumers engage with tea formats, such as loose leaf herbals and functional blends?
I'm not sure if the perception has changed. I think the overall consumption has changed. Preparation of coffee at home exploded during that time.
Right.
You know, people couldn't go to their cafes, and so they had to invent a way to make it at home. And so I think the similar thing had happened to tea, where basically the cafes were closed. I need to learn how to make tea, you know, before I would go in and the barista would make it for me. And so I think people had developed skill sets that they didn't have before. And so a much larger percentage of the population is willing to make the beverage at home. And so we're seeing a lot more consumption. I'm not sure that health is the driving force there. Like, I don't think people view tea as something that's going to help me, you know, ward off COVID or, you know, recover quicker if I do have it. I don't think that link was very visceral, but I think it's just the, you know, the experience of being locked up and learning to make stuff, and then that skill didn't go away. And so we are seeing a lot more people embracing loose tea versus what they did before.
Have herbals played a particular role in that shift?
Well, I think the herbals is also the aging of the population is driving that. Like, we have a lot of people who are switching from caffeinated tea to herbals on the advice of their physician. They're just getting to the point where they're saying, cut down on your caffeine. And so that's the natural move for them.
How does tea fit into the broader wellness economy, including sleep, relaxation, and mindfulness?
We've offered chamomile as a product probably since day one.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always been popular. And so some teas that have the ability to like calm you down and soothe you, whether it's the mints, the peppermints, the spearmint, they've always been popular. And I think they're more popular now just because of the cohort that's moving through their life cycle. So, you know, I mean, most of the boomers have already retired, and I think the last of the boomers will retire pretty soon. And so they're just in an age. I mean, they're just this mammoth cohort of people moving through their life cycle. And so they're at a stage when these things are important to them. And so, of course, we're seeing increasing sales of the products that would kind of fit that description, you know, more soothing, more relaxing, you know, less jittery.
So it is really the ritual of tea rather than the functional promise.
Well, we kind of touched upon earlier, the sociability of it. I mean, most of the time you don't have tea by yourself. You will, you know, you'll make tea. Hey, I'm making tea. Who else wants it? Somebody else will say yes. You know, there's just a nice societal give and take that occurs in that tea making process. With the example that you gave earlier, traditional medicinal going to the pill form. Like once you reduce your product to just it is take A, it will lead to B, well, then you're no longer, it's not like a tea per se. It's just literally a collection of molecules that you're calling medicine. I think we lose something when we just focus on the functionality of the beverage versus, you know, the experience of it.
Looking ahead, what health-related themes do you expect to define the next phase of tea consumption?
My wish is that the health aspects of tea become less important to people or less salient or less being the driver of their consumption. Like I would love, like if I compare it to wine, wine has a lot of health benefits, but if people only viewed it as such, like I'm drinking wine because I need my antioxidants, I think that takes away a lot of the pleasure and the history and the cultivation and the story and the romance of wine. So I think the same thing, I would much rather people focus on tea as this is a really interesting product with like a very long history, and it is handmade and is cultivated, and where it's grown differs and affects its properties. And the one on this side of the mountain might taste slightly different than the one on the opposite side of the mountain. And like, I would much rather them focus on those aspects of tea versus, oh, I'm going to drink tea because it's going to do X, Y, Z for me.
Is personalization one way to deepen that engagement?
Well, we do it with our blending program. We give customers an ability to create any tea formulation that they desire. So you can literally say, I want 20% of this tea and 30% of that tea and 50% of that one. And I'm going to add these couple of ingredients to kind of, increase the flavor. So we already do it, and we've done this for many, many years. And so it's a popular program where people are able to kind of personalize and cultivate their tea versus the one that, you know, our tea master had come up with.
Do you use that blending data for research and development?
It helps gauge the people's interest in what the ingredients are. Yes. Mm-hmm. So much of it is also tied to the theme. So a lot of the blends are created with like themes in mind. And so sometimes the theme overwhelms the actual components. You can definitely use it as a laboratory. It's crowdsourcing. It literally is allowing your customer base to come up with formulations that you would not have come up with yourself. And so based on that, on the sales trajectory, you can say, okay, this particular flavor profile really has taken off. We haven't thought of it. Luckily somebody else has. And so we kind of learn from the data.
Do you see experimentation and quote, make it your own, end quote, tea culture expanding further?
Well, tea is very forgiving. You can mix many different ingredients. You're not always going to hit upon a winning formula, but it won't be awful. Like you can't screw it up. And so, yes, the experimentation is, like the number of combinations that you can put together in terms of different teas, you can do that. When we started this process, we thought, well, you mix black teas with black teas and you mix green teas with green teas because they both require different temperatures and different steep duration. But the customers started playing. They started crossing those kind of boundaries that we had in our mind. And sometimes the product turned out to be really good. Like you sometimes would be able to blend the black tea and the green tea and it didn't taste bad. Yeah. And so now that you have all these different variations of the teas, now you can layer on top of it all these different ingredients, you know, from the herbal world or from the fruit, you know, dried fruit category. You can create like, I don't know, thousands of different combinations and they would be unique and different. And some may be, you know, some may appeal to you and not to others, but that's the beauty of the process that you literally get to fine tune and get to find like what you really like and enjoy. And it's uniquely yours. And the beauty of our process is we make it available where you can make it available to others. So it's not just you create it for yourself. Like you can literally say, this is Dan's blend. And then other people go, oh my God, Dan hit upon something really wonderful. And then, you know, they'll be purchasing it. Yeah,
I love that idea.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of TBiz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the TBiz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.